This morning, before I launch in to my homily, I feel like I have to. Somebody brought to my attention recently regarding this passage that the rich man was, you know, wearing fine purple garments and dining sumptuously, and it was brought to my attention that that must also condemn K-State fans for wearing purple. And so I want to make just very clear that I will defend K-State in our purple garments. So I think if you were to bring this gospel forward in today's society, purple garments were like the highest, that was the finest, that was the best that they had to offer, was only for royalty. So, you know, that's what purple represented, and you know, still today it's royalty and so on. But if you were to bring this forward into today, what's the equivalent of the purple garments? It's probably like, you know, pick your brand, your Gucci or your whatever. That's how I would say that would be brought into today's century. So K-State fans, you are perfectly fine. Just so let's get that out of the way. All right. Now, moving on to the gospel. All right. The Gospel of Luke. We're in year C. We're going through a 3-year cycle. We're in year C of the cycle of readings. And each of the four gospels in year C, we read primarily from the Gospel of Luke. And each of the four gospels has a particular focus. Their biggest emphasis in their gospel. Not that they would be opposed or contradict one another, but just each of the gospel writers has something that they kind of focus more clearly on. And I would say that, and not just me, but I think scripture scholars in general, they agree that Luke's focus is on the poor, on the outcast, on the marginalized, on those who are on the peripheral side of society. There's lots and lots. Luke has more parables, more stories about the poor. It's Luke's gospel where we encounter the shepherds on Christmas. It's only in Luke's gospel that he includes those shepherds who are the first ones to receive the good news of Jesus' birth. Again, the outcasts, kind of they're just shepherds, the nobodies of society. And so you can see that repeated throughout Luke's gospel. And last week even, when we had the parable of the dishonest steward, and kind of the way he used his dishonest wealth, he used his master's wealth to make friends with dishonest wealth, and how that was actually commended, not so much for the dishonesty, but because he was focusing on the focus of the poor and not necessarily on the material goods. So that was last week's gospel, and we're working our way through the Gospel of Luke. And in between, there's a couple of verses that we didn't get today, but essentially, the Pharisees hear that parable from last week, and they scoff. Okay, Jesus, you want us to, you know, make friends with the poor and associate with them, okay. And so, that sets the stage for today's gospel. And you can, like, really read through this gospel, set the stage, put yourself into the midst of this. It's a confrontational gospel where you can almost feel Jesus looking eye to eye at the Pharisees and like telling this story, this parable. There's tension here. This one stings a little bit. And you can imagine the Pharisees who were very wealthy, who wore their purple garments and so on, the upper tier of society, and kind of ignoring the needs of anybody around them, they know that Jesus is directing this towards them. But this idea of the rich man who Lazarus is on his doorstep, you get the image that he has to physically like step over the body of this man laying on his porch so that he could go about his day. It's kind of a very visceral image. And it should strike us because you and I are the rich man. And, you know, maybe by our society's standards, maybe we're just the average Joe. Maybe we're just, you know, getting along. But I would argue that we live in a society, that we live in a nation that is more prosperous than any other nation in the history of the world. Like, we have more disposable income. We have more at our fingertips than even kings and royalty and emperors from any point in history. And you think about it, that if you're hot, you push a button. If you're cold, you push a button. When's the last time where you went to bed worried about whether or not your house is going to be broken into and your wife and kids dragged off by Vikings? Or, you know, we have so much security and there's so much prosperity around us that we become numb to it. That the standard and the level that we live and exist in, again, it's, we are very, very, very blessed. Even the poor among us are still incredibly blessed. So maybe it's easy to look at the rich man and say, oh, that's got to be somebody else. No. The rich man is, it's you. The rich man is me. I think this gospel gives us an opportunity to reflect a little bit on two of the major governing principles of Catholic moral and social theology. Two things, if you're in high school or if you were recently in high school, hopefully this will ring a bell. But there are two major principles that guide Catholic moral teaching that I think are worth kind of reflecting on a little bit today. And to be honest, I've actually never preached on them directly, at least on a weekend in a parish homily. I've preached at it when I was in high school. But those two principles are solidarity and subsidiarity. Two big kind of fancy Catholic words, and you know, those are the words that if you're at one of those Catholic cocktail parties and you're sipping your martini, you can say, oh yeah, solidarity, and like everyone will nod their heads, oh yes, of course, and so you'll feel very uppity, you know. But solidarity, so what are we talking about? What does the church mean when it talks about the principle of solidarity? Well, it's essentially that we are part of a collective body of Christ, collective humanity, and we do not get the luxury of ignoring our brothers and sisters. We do not get the luxury of ignoring the Lazarus on our doorstep. That because we are part, we share the human condition, we have to have concern for the people around us. It's not just simply a matter of us by ourselves and our little eggshell individually wrapped, you know, world where I'm good, people are closest to me, my family, they're fine, so, you know, I'm tuned out to the rest of the world. And unfortunately, I think we do tune out the rest of the world. It's just, and maybe that's just the nature of human being, and maybe we can't care about everything that comes across the news, but, I mean, does it stir you at all anymore when you hear some of these things that are going on throughout the world? Or is it just, oh, it's another hurricane, it's another wildfire, it's another earthquake, it's another shooting, it's another, and, oh, I wonder what's on Channel 10, you know? And we just move along. Do we even pause to want to pray in those moments? Or are we even bothered or concerned enough to move to action of some sort, to do something? Now, that's the idea solidarity. Subsidiarity is another principle that guides Catholic moral teaching and social. It's a social principle. And that principle essentially says that issues, problems, help, support should come from the smallest, closest, most local level possible whenever possible. That if there's a matter that comes up, if you have a neighbor down the street who fell and broke their leg, that if you're the one closest to them or if you're a family member of them, by golly, mow their lawn, you know? That it shouldn't have to be, well, we call the city and hopefully the city will send somebody out and they'll, like, as much as possible. The Catholic principle is that we take care of our own at the smallest level possible. Now, again, you can see maybe as a society or maybe even internationally, we're in some ways we're drifting away from that principle, especially that principle is opposed to maybe like a kind of a welfare state where it's like, well, it's the government's job. The government will take care of them. Somebody else, somewhere in the world, those people over there, somebody will step in and do something, right? I don't have to get involved. I don't have to roll up my sleeves. I don't have to open my checkbook. And so, and I'm not knocking saying that there's not a need for Social Security or for different kinds of welfare to take care of people who genuinely need it. But you know what the welfare system used to be called? Not even that long ago. It used to be called the church. It used to be part of, like, Christians everywhere just knew and understood that we take care of our own, starting on the smallest level, but then we move out from there. Historically, for thousands of years, it was the church. It was the practicing members of the church who knew that it's our responsibility to look out for others. But I think that's one of the issues that we run into when it's just like, okay, well, I'll just pay my taxes and have somebody out there take care of the problem. It relieves us of the responsibility to look after our brothers and sisters. And I would say that applies particularly to our own homes. If it's at the smallest level, then it starts within our own home, within our own family. St. Paul believed this too, as a matter of fact, in the first letter of Timothy. I mean, he states it very, very, like, sharply, that those who refuse to provide for their members of their own family, and particularly members of their own household, have denied the faith, and they are worse than unbelievers. That's St. Paul. If you do not provide for your own family and members of your own household, then you have denied the faith, and you're worse than an unbeliever. Now, I'm not saying we have to enable people who are making bad decisions and we have to bankroll their bad decisions. That's not what I'm saying. But we also can't turn a blind eye and step over the body of somebody who desperately needs our help. And it's not just a matter of finances and money. And here's the truth, brothers and sisters, and this is the point that I'm just seeing more and more and more clearly. That as much as there's a poverty in the world, throughout the world, even more so there is a spiritual poverty. Mother Teresa of Calcutta, when she came and she saw, she had a tour of, the Mall of America up in Minnesota. She had this tour of Mall of America, and somebody asked her, like foolishly asked her, "What do you think? What do you think, Mother Teresa?" And she said, "I've never seen so much unnecessary stuff." This principle of subsidiarity, where we're looking out for the people around us. Again, Mother Teresa, maybe I've told this story before, but it bears repeating, that she was in a car on the way to the airport, and she saw a guy lying in the ditch, and she told her driver to stop the car, and he said, "Mother, we can't stop. You're going to miss your flight. You're on a deadline," and so on and so on. And she said, "Stop the car. I will not leave my Jesus laying in the ditch." And so I pulled around and picked him up, and there's a journalist who was with her and witnessed all this happen, and as she brought him back to the convent and was digging the maggots out of his rotting flesh as he's dying, it stinks to high heaven. The journalist said, "Mother, I don't know how you're doing that. I could not do that for $1 million. And Mother said, "Yeah, neither would I."